And good morning. Welcome to the month of June. It's another Saturday morning here on our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, Denny. Good morning to you.
And John Trappe from the U of M. He is our turf expert, our turf guru. I hope you don't mind that title, John.
Not at all. Good morning.
Good morning. So as I mentioned earlier this morning in the show, if you have specific lawn questions, this is your day to ask John Trappe those questions. And Julie, of course, fielding a whole bunch of others. And we have some for both of you already this morning, which is not unusual. So any kind of a lawn or garden question here on our Smart Garden Show, call now, text now. Just one number will get you either 651-461-9226. Julie, this one came in real early this morning, as a matter of fact. Texter says, I have some tomatoes and pepper plants that have sun scald. Do you think they'll end up being okay? Look in that crystal ball, will you?
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine. This usually happens when our plants are suddenly exposed to higher light than maybe, if, for example, if you started them indoors under lights and you brought them outside, they sometimes get a little sun scald, but that'll be fine. It's just those leaves that have been affected.
Okay. Well, that's good news. That's good news. John, there was a question, in fact, a couple of them about, in fact, I think I probably have a similar question about lawns. This texter specifically said, we reseeded part of our lawn, but it came up patchy. Should we rough up the bare areas and reseed?
We're, assuming this person is, in or near the Twin Cities, we're still not quite too late to try reseeding. I would still go ahead and throw some seed down in some of those bare areas. You should have had some germination and emergence already. So for whatever reason, you can try to help encourage the seed-to-soil contact, just like the person asking the question had suggested. Just try to ensure seed-to-soil contact, and then just keep it moist for the first couple of weeks as it's emerging.
And speaking of keeping that area watered or whatever, I was looking at the forecast, and it looks like a pretty good week for that. We're going to, again, have pretty good chances of showers this coming week, especially on Tuesday. So, yeah, this might be a good week to reseed. Let's see. Here's another one. Why aren't there any helicopter seeds from the maple trees this year?
I guess I haven't noticed that. I don't think we're to that point yet. The flowers have just fallen off my maple tree, and I don't think they've produced any seed. The other thing too is that the production of seeds sometimes is tied to environmental issues, and we had a pretty mild winter.
Yes.
So environmental stresses can cause plants to produce a lot of seed. We call it masting. And so it may be that this is an off year for that plant. They are not producing as much seed. So I kind of welcome that because you got to sweep them up.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't worry too much. As long as the plant is healthy and green and leafing out nicely, I think it's just the conditions are not ripe for a ton of seed at this point.
Another text to Julie and John came in a bit ago. Acorns are sprouting in my yard. Will they die off by mowing them, or do I have to pull them, or is there something I can spray on them? Love your show. Well, thank you for that. But what do you think about the acorn issue?
Most hardwood acorns from oaks and things like that, they don't tolerate mowing very well. So, most of the time you don't have to treat the weeds, but you can simply just pull them up pretty easily. You can also just try to be patient and let the squirrels finish them off as they're still going around and looking for last year's acorns. So I would just try to be patient and just continue to mow as normal, and you probably won't have to deal with them. You can treat them later on with a selective broadleaf herbicide, but more than likely that would be unnecessary.
Let's talk a little bit about mowing, if we may, besides, the no-mow may all of the other things from last year or so. I think I've learned one thing from you and your colleagues is that mowing, keeping the grass mowed longer really makes it look healthier. I may have to mow more often, but that really does make a difference, doesn't it?
It certainly does. We recommend mowing at least 3 to 3.5 inches in height. And that's the after mowing height. So if you mow it taller, your lawn is going to be more drought tolerant. It's going to be more resistant to weeds like crabgrass. And means you're going to mow it less. You're going to need to mow it less often. Fewer number of mowings throughout the year if you mow it at a taller mowing height. So just it's basically winning all around by raising your mowing height up to that at least 3 to 3.5 inches.
I know that
it also will help during the drier part of the summer, right, John?
Oh yeah, kind of
during the dormant season.
Absolutely.
If it's longer.
Yep, it'll stay green a little bit longer. It'll just be healthier, just more resistant to pests and other stresses.
I know we have maybe discussions at our house, like my wife will say, put that bag on this time. I don't like all that hay. But I'll do that the first time. But if I keep at it, I think, and again, there's something I've learned from you guys, is that don't clip it. Put those clippings back in the yard, right?
Always mulch or return the clippings as you're mowing, and if you can, never bag them, because you're really just returning all those nutrients back to the soil. So if you do bag them, consistently throughout the year, you're taking a really substantial amount of nutrients, and in some cases, a third to half the amount of nitrogen that the plants would need. Would need to be replaced through supplemental fertilizer. So always mulch and return the clippings if you can.
I'm going to record that statement and play it back here at home next time. All right, I tell you what, let's do this before we break. Dennis, I want to grab a phone call. Pat in St. Cloud's calling in. Let's hear from Pat, and then we'll take our break. Pat, what is your question this morning?
Good morning. My question is, I'd like to move hostas to the shady side of my house, and I'd put them between the foundation and the drip, where the drip stuff, the rain comes off and drips and, indents your lawn. Is that too close to the house? I don't want to, rot the siding or have bugs and insects get attracted and then come into the house. Is that recommended, or am I kind of being foolish?
No, I think actually that's a great place for hosta. That's a pretty dry area. It's that overhang of your roof, and it protects that area between the foundation and, that garden bed from getting a lot of sun and oftentimes a lot of moisture. So it should be a great place for hostas. They're tough plants. When you're moving them, you may take the opportunity to also divide them. It's a little bit later in the season. A lot of them have leafed out completely, but you can still split the hostas, and you can do that by just simply taking a spade and, cutting the plant in half with that spade. You can also use a tree saw. That works well, too, to just literally saw it in half. But a foundation planting is a great place for hosta, and I don't think you're going to have any issues with insects there. You may, when they're getting reestablished in that space, give them a little more water than you would, and just pay attention to how dry it really is while they're reestablishing their roots. But great idea. Hostas are wonderful foundation plants.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Invite our listeners to join in on our Smart Garden Show, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M, answering specifically any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have this morning. And we have many, as usual. In fact, before we get too far away, we always like to mention, and for good reason, the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu. Julie and John, those things, you guys put so much work in, and your colleagues do as well. For example, what can we find there now these days?
Oh my gosh, we can find all sorts of information about different kinds of plants, things like information on flowers. We have good information on annuals from our annual trials up in Morris. Houseplant information, trees and shrubs, a lot of good information there on selecting these plants, on how to plant them, on watering them, which we haven't had to worry about right now, but we may have to later in the summer. Also on fruits. So if you have fruit trees or if you grow grapes, or if you're curious about growing some of our berries, that's a great website, webpage series to look at. And also a lot on native plants, too. Native plants are very resilient. They do a great job against these fluctuating weather conditions we have. So people like to look at that opportunity and see some of our native plants that might fit for their landscapes. And, of course, tons of stuff on vegetables. And, John, do you want to mention anything about the lawn pages and maybe the weeds?
Yeah. Yeah, of course, we have quite a bit of information for, you know, really any type of information someone might need for managing their lawns or their gardens. We have resources for identifying weeds, on how to control or manage them. What is a weed? Maybe going into that a little bit as well. That's always worth some discussion and some background, but just a ton of really great resources. We also have support for just in case, you know, we can't quite get to a question today. There's always an Ask a Master Gardener for getting some more support from the University of Minnesota Extension.
Yeah, it's a great website, extension.umn.edu. Check it out. Texter wants to know, please talk about the hat trick apple tree. Ours looks healthy, but never flowers and produce apples. We've had it for 5 years.
The hat trick apple tree. Hmm. I personally am not familiar with that particular apple tree, but I do know that some apple trees take longer to mature to the point at which they produce fruit. So, for example, I had a Honeycrisp that was a semi-dwarf tree, and it took 7 years before it even flowered I planted it. So sometimes you have to be patient. The tree has to mature, just like people do. And ultimately, as long as the tree, keep it healthy, keep it watered, ultimately it'll produce for you. The other thing to think about is if you're not getting flowers, it's one thing, but if you're getting flowers and no fruit, it may be that you don't have enough pollinator activity. And apple trees require a second cultivar to cross-pollinate with. So again, I'm not familiar with hat trick. That's not one that I know about, but you can look up that information and or contact the company that you purchased it from and ask them what would be a good cross-pollinator. Crab apples are oftentimes just fine for pollinating other trees. And even if your neighbor has a crab apple and you have an apple tree, production apple tree, that works out well too. But you want to encourage those pollinators in your yard by planting pollinator-friendly flowers and plants and getting them busy in your landscape.
Sure. Another tree question, this one, a young cherry tree. Because of all the rain and wind, several lower branches have snapped and bent. However, they're still attached and the leaves are looking normal. Even though I can see, Tester says, the inner part of the wood at the breakpoint. Should I just leave the branches as they are and wait to prune them in the winter, or should I prune them now?
If they are still growing, I would go ahead and leave them attached at this point. Sometimes pruning during this warmer season can invite pests to kind of latch onto your plant and cause some issues. And then I would just make a note that later next winter, like you mentioned, that we should go ahead and you should go ahead and prune that tree. But just kind of keep an eye on it. John, I don't know, you're a tree guy too, I believe. And what? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really would just exactly what you said, Julie. You know, if in some cases they can actually heal over by themselves, but you know, the other issue is just like Julie had mentioned. You know, if you're creating an open wound like that, it can invite some pests or stress to the plant further. But if it is an issue because of, you know, you can't maintain it or anything like that, you know, from like a functional standpoint, maybe it's worth pruning at that point. But I would, you know, just have a hard time imagining why you would need to right now, other than the fact that it just looks a little bit off.
Yeah. Trees will callus over when they have a damaged area like that. So keep it watered well. I mean, we got a lot of rain right now. Keep it mulched. That's a good thing to do to protect the roots. And if you're concerned at all, if the branch starts to hang low, you know, starts to bend, you maybe want to just secure it with a flexible band or something to hold that branch in place until you can prune it off next year.
All right. We need to take a quick break. Have a look at that forecast, see what this rest of the weekend and this week's weather promises. We'll take this break for weather and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you, the 1st of June. We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here along with Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M, answering any kind of a lawn or question you may have. And by the way, both Julie and John, we have about 6 tons of text messages. But, you know, we have phone calls as well. We welcome both phone calls and texts, as you know. Frank calling in this morning from Roseville, I believe. Frank, good morning. What is your question?
Hi, good morning. Question on an oak tree, actually two. There were two oak trees, and they were combined, you know, growing out of the same root system. One was leaning, and I had to have one cut down, and there's about a foot protruding yet of the dead one. I just noticed it's full of, like, carpenter ants or something on that dead tree protruding yet. So I'm wondering if that will affect the live tree also.
Well, I believe that carpenter ants will only feed on rotting wood. So as long as the other tree is healthy, then it would probably not affect the other tree necessarily, but it's a good thing to keep an eye out for. And if the trees are similar in age, if you see any damage to the oak tree, if you see them transferring over there, it's always good to get a certified arborist in to take a look at particularly really valuable trees like oak trees. So keep an eye on it. And again, I think carpenter ants are really attracted to the rotting wood. And that would make sense because you cut the tree down at that point.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Texter says they have river rock around their landscaping that's very tight to the plants. Should there be some space between the plants and the rocks?
That's hard to do because those rocks will kind of fall into place due to their weight. It's good to pull mulch away, any kind of mulch away from plant bases. I think with river rock, though, because it's technically an inorganic, we call it an inorganic mulch because it doesn't break down, it should be okay around the plants. If you feel more comfortable pulling it away from the plant base, you can do that. But it's not like an organic mulch, like a wood mulch, that can hold a lot of moisture and insects will, you know, reside in it. And so you can kind of pull it away if you want, but you don't have to.
John, here's a couple of questions, lawn questions. One, texter says, I need to overseed and fertilize. Should they be done together? That's one question. And another long question from another listener says, after applying crabgrass preventer, how long do I have to wait to plant grass seed?
Okay, the first one, you can put down fertilizer at the same time you put down seed. That's normally not too much of an issue. I would advise against over fertilizing. Generally, for most Minnesota soils, we have high phosphorus as it is, so adding starter fertilizer and things like that is not always necessary. And in some cases, it could actually work against you if you're fertilizing a bunch of weeds that are already there or the existing lawn to compete against it. So I like to keep it a little bit lean and actually avoid using fertilizer if I don't have to. Now, as far as the timing of the overseeding, we are getting into a point where you are going to start, especially with the fertilizer, fertilizing a little bit too late in the summer. Another week or two of these kind of moderate temperatures, and I think we'll probably be fine. But if it starts getting a little bit much warmer into the very consistently into the 80s. At that point, you're encouraging the plant to grow in a time when it is going to just kind of try to just sit there and survive some heat and drought stress for later in the summer. So, you know, really just the next couple of weeks, and then after that, I would avoid fertilizing. More beyond that. Now, the other question as far as the crabgrass preventer, it really depends on the product that was used, on whether or not you can seed again. I kind of answered this already, but I would, if you've already put down a crabgrass preventer this spring, I would wait until the fall to get the most bang for your buck for the seed that you're putting down, just to make sure you're going to get as much germination as possible. Just wait until that Labor Day weekend or so.
Okay, very good. Let's get back to the phones. Bill checking in this morning from Waverly, Minnesota. Bill, you're on CCO. What is your question, please?
I was wondering, I got a pear tree that flowered beautifully, but I was wondering if that needed a mate to produce vegetables.
This is a pear tree?
Pear tree, yeah.
Pear tree? Pear trees will produce fruit on their own.
I don't know.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your answer,
okay.
Julie.
So pear trees will produce fruit on their own, but they will produce more if you have a second pear tree to cross-pollinate. So if you want a lot of pears, I would look on our fruit page under pear trees and look at different types of, different cultivars of pears that you can use for cross-pollination. You do want to know what kind of pear tree you have, so that would be really helpful. But again, they will produce some fruit without a second tree.
Listener wants to know this. How do you identify the critters that are making holes in my lawn and how to get rid of them?
Well, that could be any number of things. So as far as the what is making holes, I can provide some suggestions to help with searching out some other symptoms that you might be able to find on the internet. Generally, if they're smaller holes, they're most of the time birds or small rodents like squirrels and chipmunks and things like that are just burying things. If they're much larger holes, sometimes that's an indication of raccoons and possums, if they're literally rolling up sod. Sometimes they're doing that looking for white grubs. The other option could just be moles themselves, moles with an M, as they're just burrowing and tunneling and things like that. Generally, as those animals are making the larger holes, they're really more of a symptom of another problem, and it's difficult to discourage the larger animals from doing that damage. If you address the reason why they're there, that's a good starting point. So grub control can help with the raccoons and possums rolling up the sod. Really just using some kind of a mole trap on the moles would be a good start for them.
Okay. Julie, you wanted to do kind of a follow-up on that hat trick apple question.
Yeah, so the hat trick, John looked some stuff up, and then I did too, because we're curious about this. The hat trick apple tree is a dwarf apple tree that has been bred to be espaliered, in other words, pruned to be flat against a wall or be trained into a shape or a form, a special form. And because of that, and the hat trick comes from the fact there are three different cultivars that are grafted to this single tree. So you have Zestar, Honey Crisp, and one other one. I'm not sure. I can't remember what that is.
Sweet 16.
Sweet 16. Thank you. And so the cross-pollination is taken care of because we have three different cultivars on the same tree. So that is not the issue. But these trees are designed to be pruned very heavily into that espalier shape. So they are probably producing too much foliage and not enough concentration on the apples, on the fruiting and flowering. So I would find out and learn how to prune an espalier tree if you don't know. If you do know, you may want to take take a look at some information about removing particular branches from the tree, like the water sprouts. These are very vertical sprouts that come off the branches at a cut point. And really doing a solid job next winter on pruning this tree because it is designed to be pruned. And that may be why you're getting too much leaf and not enough fruit and flower.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones before we take a break. I do believe Diane is waiting there in St. Paul. Thanks for waiting, Diane. What is your question?
Yes, I have some clumps of bearded iris that have got two different varieties in the same clump. And I want to know if you have some suggestions for how I could label the leaves so that I can identify which of the plants belong to each of the two different varieties when I want to split them and move them apart.
Wow, I have to say I've never been asked that question before. How to label the leaves. The problem is the leaves are going to die back. So whatever, even if you put like a number on the leaf with a Sharpie or something, you're going to have that issue with dividing them. Now, iris are divided, I believe, in June, or I'm sorry, in probably late June. They're blooming right now, so we divide them after they bloom. And you could literally divide them at that point and separate the colors and put a tag or a sticker or a number on one of the leaves in that clump. Say number one is a yellow one and number two is a purple one. And then when you divide them in late June, early July, you could go ahead and separate them at that point. The leaves may still be intact. Otherwise, you could put a very loose zip tie around the leaves or one of the leaves. And that would, of course, then not fade or fall off. So then you would know what color that is. That's all I can think of right now.
All right. I know we need to take a bit of a break, but I failed to ask you, Julie, if the Abiders are playing anywhere soon.
We are. Thank you for asking that. We have a number of gigs in June. We are playing on June 20th at Lake Minnetonka Shores, which is a senior living community for their open house. We and the public is welcome. It is in Spring Park, Minnesota, not too far from my house. We are playing June 15th, which is for the Carp Fest. This is a citizen group that's concerned about water quality here at Lake Minnetonka. And we are also playing at Minnetonka Orchards in Minnetrista on June 23rd. So we've got three gigs coming up in June. You can find out information and where we are at our website, theabiders.net.
John, will you be joining the Abiders on your bongo drums?
Yeah.
I wish. It looks like it's always a lot of fun.
John, will you be joining the Abiders on your bongo drums?
Yeah.
I wish. It looks like it's always a lot of fun.
It is. They are. It's a lot of fun. Check them out if you can. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be here answering any kind of a home improvement question you might have. Our home improvement show next hour here on 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just tuning in, Julie Wisenhorn and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have. And as mentioned earlier, Julie and John, we still have many to go here. So let's see how many folks we can help out before you take your leave. Here's one. Our daughter is buying a house in a typical Minneapolis neighborhood. We noticed this yard and most homes around it have horrible grass. The real estate agent said there is a grub problem in Minneapolis. Have you heard of this, and how do you treat it?
Grubs can certainly cause some lawn issues. There's no doubt about that, and they're definitely in Minnesota. So I would first verify that it is grub damage. If it's an entire neighborhood, I'm a little bit skeptical that it would be grubs. More often than not, it's something to do with just excessive shade or poor soil conditions or anything like that. So I would first just verify that it is grubs. If they are, they can be treated. And using something like a preventative treatment is containing the active ingredient chlorantraniliprole or Grub-X. Scott's Grub-X is one that's one of the more common brands for that. That's the most effective treatment, but again, I would just verify that it is grubs first. Otherwise, just check out the extension webpage, extension.umn.edu, for looking at the lawn care calendar is a great place to start for just looking at all of the different lawn care practices, best management practices that are recommended throughout the year.
Yeah, that is a great resource for that information. You know what I've got to do, Julie and John, and we always like to mention, because I just got my membership card the other day, the Arboretum. What a great time of year.
I know, it's beautiful. I was just there on Sunday with my cousins who were in town, and the azaleas were unbelievable. Now, I don't know what they look like after the rain yesterday, but they were gorgeous. And, of course, the iris are blooming. Lots of great plants to see. Gorgeous time. But two things I wanted to mention is we have two new offerings. One is called Plant Walks. So these take place between 10 and 11 a.m. on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They're about a quarter of a mile. There's no stairs. They're for all ages, and they are led by volunteers or our very knowledgeable education staff. We also have drop-in discovery booths that are planted throughout the Arboretum, and these are on Thursdays and Sundays from 10 to 1, and it's just about a 5 to 15-minute opportunity for adults, children, teens to do something related to plants, whether it's identifying things or learning things or making something. So great opportunities. These all are free with your admission, and just a really fun thing to do. And that's new this year at the Arboretum.
Get online, though, to get in there, right?
Yes. Yeah. There are some new guidelines for tickets. So members do not need tickets on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then just take a look at that, because there are some changes that make it a little bit easier for some people and give you some better advantages with your membership.
Just head out west on Highway 5 to 41. I guess that's the closest intersection.
That's right.
You can kind of see it off to your left there.
Take a look, and before you go, read arb.umn.edu and read about what's going on. There's also the Toast and Taste tickets, Taste and Toast tickets that are available now. This is a great opportunity to try some Minnesota drinks and food and help support the Arboretum.
Absolutely. Great place. Wonderful place. Listener says this: I have a 10-year-old lawn here in the Twin Cities that was Kentucky bluegrass sod. Over the years, I have reseeded with rye and fescue grass seed to fill in small areas from winter kill. Well, now the lawn is multicolored. Can I oversee the entire lawn with Kentucky bluegrass seed to get the lawn back to that nice, even, dark green color?
You can do that. You can overseed, but it's going to be really problematic to get that kind of uniform color again. After you've added those other species, which, by the way, most of the perennial ryegrass is probably not there anymore. It's really just the fescues, whether that was tall fescue or the fine fescues. I would just kind of embrace that. If you have some grasses that are that were overseeded into a new area and they're a different color, it's probably because they're a little bit better adapted and they were able to just outcompete the existing Kentucky bluegrass. I wouldn't necessarily recommend somebody to start over with their lawn, but that would be your best option if having a uniform color across your whole lawn is really that important. That's your best option at this point. Overseeding is not very effective for trying to do that over time.
John, here's a question, and Julie, from our comment about mulching grass clippings. Won't mulching those grass clippings cause you to have to aerate more often?
No. So the clippings themselves are just very low carbon, so they're very easily broken down. They don't contribute to thatch. Aeration is used to reduce soil compaction, not necessarily to reduce thatch in lawns, as is often the thought of. Misconception as far as what contributes to thatch.
Oh, my goodness. We have about a minute to go. Maybe one more quick one. Good morning. Is there a seed or seed blend type you'd recommend for an area that historically had mulch put down, but now I'd like to have some sort of prairie grass/wildflowers? It's an area that won't be mowed.
I would take a look at some of our native plant nurseries. They do seed mixes and they have good decision-making tools based on the conditions that you have. Some places are are part shade, some are full sun, some are shady. And take a look at some of those different offerings that they have.
And let's not forget, John, to remind listeners to check out the university's website, which is what?
extension.umn.edu.
And what do we click on there, Julie?
Yard and garden, and or you can just go to the search box and type in your question or a topic that you're interested in.
Outstanding. Thank you both, Julie and John. It was a great show, and of course, we could probably do another 6 hours or so standing on our heads. But let's get together again when you guys have time, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Julie. Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Now, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be joining us. Hope you do, too, to get any questions answered about home improvement. That's our home improvement show next hour here on CCO. 63 degrees in the Twin Cities on our way to 78. Stay with us on this Saturday. And good morning. Welcome to the month of June. It's another Saturday morning here on our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, Denny. Good morning to you.
And John Trappe from the U of M. He is our turf expert, our turf guru. I hope you don't mind that title, John.
Not at all. Good morning.
All right, good morning. So as I mentioned earlier this morning in the show, if you have specific lawn questions, this is your day to ask John Trappe those questions. And Julie, of course, fielding a whole bunch of others. And we have some for both of you already this morning, which is not unusual. So any kind of a lawn or garden question here on our Smart Garden Show, call now, text now. Just one number will get you either 651-461-9226. Julie, this one came in real early this morning, as a matter of fact. Texter says, I have some tomatoes and pepper plants that have sun scald. Do you think they'll end up being okay? Look in that crystal ball, will you?
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine. This usually happens when our plants are suddenly exposed to higher light than maybe if, for example, if you started them in a indoors under lights and you brought them outside, they sometimes get a little sun scald, but that'll be fine. It's just those leaves that have been affected.
Okay, well, that's good news. That's good news. John, there was a question, in fact, a couple of them about, in fact, I think I probably have a similar question about lawns. This texter specifically said, we reseeded part of our lawn, but it came up patchy. Should we rough up the bare areas and reseed?
We're, you know, assuming this person is, you know, in or near the Twin Cities, we're still not quite too late to try reseeding. I would still go ahead and throw some seed down in some of those bare areas. You should have had some germination and emergence already. So for whatever reason, you can try to help encourage the seed-to-soil contact, just like the person asking the question had suggested. Just try to ensure seed-to-soil contact, and then just keep it moist for the first couple of weeks as it's emerging.
And speaking of keeping that area watered or whatever, I was looking at the forecast, and it looks like a pretty good week for that. We're going to, again, have pretty good chances of showers this coming week, especially on Tuesday. So, yeah, this might be a good week to reseed. Let's see. Here's another one. Why aren't there any helicopter seeds from the maple trees this year?
I guess I haven't noticed that. I don't think we're to that point yet. The flowers have just fallen off my maple tree, and I don't think they've produced any seed. The other thing too is that the production of seed sometimes is tied to environmental issues, and we had a pretty mild winter.
Yes.
So environmental stresses can cause plants to produce a lot of seed. We call it masting. And so it may be that this is an off year for that plant. They are not producing as much seed. So I kind of welcome that because you got to sweep them up.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't worry too much. As long as the plant is healthy and green and leafing out nicely, I think it's just the conditions are not ripe for a ton of seed at this point.
Another text to Julie and John came in a bit ago. Acorns are sprouting in my yard. Will they die off by mowing them, or do I have to pull them, or is there something I can spray on them? Love your show. Well, thank you for that. But what do you think about the acorn issue?
Most hardwood acorns from oaks and things like that, they don't tolerate mowing very well. So, you know, most of the time you don't have to treat the weeds, but you can simply just pull them up pretty easily. You can also just try to be patient and let the squirrels finish them off as they're still going around looking for last year's acorns. So I would just try to be patient and just continue to mow as normal, and you probably won't have to deal with them. You can treat them later on with a selective broadleaf herbicide, but more than likely that would be unnecessary.
Let's talk a little bit about mowing, if we may. Besides, you know, the no-mow, all of the other things from last year or so. I think I've learned one thing from you and your colleagues is that mowing, keeping the grass mowed longer really makes it look healthier. I may have to mow more often, but that really does make a difference, doesn't it?
It certainly does. We recommend mowing at least 3 to 3.5 inches in height. And that's the after mowing height. So if you mow it taller, your lawn is going to be more drought tolerant. It's going to be more resistant to weeds like crabgrass. Means you're going to mow it less. You're going to need to mow it less often. Fewer number of mowings throughout the year if you mow it at a taller mowing height. So just it's basically winning all around for by raising your mowing height up to that at least 3 to 3.5 inches.
I know that
it also will help during the drier part of the summer, right, John?
Oh yeah,
during the dormant season.
Absolutely.
If it's longer.
Yep, it'll stay green a little bit longer. It'll just be healthier, just more resistant to pests and other stresses.
I know we have maybe discussions at our house, like my wife will say, put that bag on this time. I don't like all that hay. But I'll do that the first time. But if I keep at it, I think, and again, there's something I've learned from you guys, is that don't clip it. Put those clippings back in the yard, right?
Always mulch or return the clippings as you're mowing, and if you can, never bag them, because you're really just returning all those nutrients back to the soil. So if you do bag them, never bag them, because you're really just returning all those nutrients back to the soil. So if you do bag them, consistently throughout the year, you're taking a really substantial amount of nutrients, and in some cases, a third to half the amount of nitrogen that the plants would need. Would need to be replaced through supplemental fertilizer. So always mulch and return the clippings if you can.
I'm going to record that statement and play it back here at home next time. All right, I tell you what, let's do this before we break. Dennis, I want to grab a phone call. Pat in St. Cloud's calling in. Let's hear from Pat, and then we'll take our break. Pat, what is your question this morning?
Good morning. My question is, I'd like to move hostas to the shady side of my house, and I'd put them between the foundation and the drip, where the drip stuff, the rain comes off and drips and, you know, indents your lawn. Is that too close to the house? I don't want to, you know, rot the siding or have bugs and insects get attracted and then come into the house. Is that recommended, or am I kind of being foolish?
No, I think actually that's a great place for hosta. That's a pretty dry area. It's that overhang of your roof, and it protects that area between the foundation and, you know, that garden bed from getting a lot of sun and oftentimes a lot of moisture. So it should be a great place for hostas. They're tough plants. When you're moving them, you may take the opportunity to also divide them. It's a little bit later in the season. A lot of them have leafed out completely, but you can still split the hostas, and you can do that by just simply taking a spade and, you know, cutting the plant in half with that spade. You can also use a tree saw. That works well, too, to just literally saw it in half. But a foundation planting is a great place for hosta, and I don't think you're going to have any issues with insects there. You may, when they're getting reestablished in that space, give them a little more water than you would, and just pay attention to how dry it really is while they're reestablishing their roots. But great idea. Hostas are wonderful foundation plants.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Invite our listeners to join in on our Smart Garden Show, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe from the U of M, answering specifically any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have this morning. And we have many, as usual. In fact, you know, before we get too far away, we always like to mention, and for good reason, the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu. Julie and John, those things, you guys put so much work in, and your colleagues do as well. For example, what can we find there now these days?
Oh, my gosh. We can find all sorts of information about different kinds of plants, things like information on flowers. We have good information on annuals from our annual trials up in Morris. Houseplant information, trees and shrubs, a lot of good information there on selecting these plants, on how to plant them, on watering them, which we haven't had to worry about right now, but we may have to later in the summer. Also on fruits. So if you have fruit trees or if you grow grapes, or if you're curious about growing some of our berries, that's a great website, webpage series to look at. And also a lot on native plants, too. Native plants are very resilient. They do a great job against these fluctuating weather conditions we have. So people like to look at that opportunity and see some of our native plants that might fit for their landscapes. And, of course, tons of stuff on vegetables. And, John, do you want to mention anything about the lawn pages and maybe the weeds?
Yeah, of course we have quite a bit of information for, you know, really any type of information someone might need for managing their lawns or their gardens. We have resources for identifying weeds, on how to control or manage them. What is a weed? Maybe going into that a little bit as well. That's always worth worth some discussion and some background, but just a ton of really great resources. We also have support for just in case, you know, we can't quite get to a question today. There's always an Ask a Master Gardener for getting some more support for from the University of Minnesota Extension.
Yeah, it's a great website, extension.umn.edu. Check it out. Texter wants to know, please talk about the hat trick apple tree. Ours looks healthy, but never flowers and produce apples. We've had it for 5 years.
The hat trick apple tree. Hmm. I personally am not familiar with that particular apple tree, but I do know that some apple trees take longer to mature to the point at which they produce fruit. So, for example, I had a Honeycrisp that was a semi-dwarf tree, and it took 7 years before it even flowered I planted it. So sometimes you have to be patient. The tree has to mature, just like people do. And ultimately, as long as the tree, keep it healthy, keep it watered, ultimately it'll produce for you. The other thing to think about is if you're not getting flowers, it's one thing, but if you're getting flowers and no fruit, it may be that you don't have enough pollinator activity. And apple trees require a second cultivar to cross-pollinate with. So again, I'm not familiar with hat trick. That's not one that I know about, but you can look up that information and or contact the company that you purchased it from and ask them what would be a good cross-pollinator. Crab apples are oftentimes just fine for pollinating other trees. And even if your neighbor has a crab apple and you have an apple tree, production apple tree, that works out well too. But you want to encourage those pollinators in your yard by planting pollinator-friendly flowers and plants and getting them busy in your landscape.
Sure. Another tree question, this one, a young cherry tree. Because of all the rain and wind, several lower branches have snapped and bent. However, they're still attached and the leaves are looking normal. Even though I can see, tester says, the inner part of the wood at the breakpoint. Should I just leave the branches as they are and wait to prune them in the winter, or should I prune them now?
If they are still growing, I would go ahead and leave them attached at this point. Sometimes pruning during this warmer season can invite pests to kind of latch onto your plant and cause some issues. And then I would just make a note that later next winter, like you mentioned, that we should go ahead and you should go ahead and prune that tree. But just kind of keep an eye on it. John, sure. I don't know, you're a tree guy too, I believe. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, exactly what you said, Julie. In some cases they can actually heal over by themselves, but
right.
You know, the other issue is, just like Julie had mentioned, you know, if you're creating an open wound like that, it can invite some pests or stress to the plant further. But if it is an issue because of, you know, you're can't maintain it or anything like that, you know, from like a functional standpoint, maybe it's worth pruning at that point. But mm-hmm. I would, you know, just have a hard time imagining why you would need to right now, other than the fact that it just looks a little bit off.
Yeah. Trees will callus over when they have a damaged area like that. So keep it watered well. I mean, we got a lot of rain right now. Keep it mulched. That's a good thing to do to protect the roots. And if you're concerned at all, if the branch starts to hang low, you know, starts to bend, you maybe want to just secure it with a flexible band or something to hold that branch in place until you can prune it off next year.
All right. We need to take a quick break. Have a look at that forecast, see what this rest of the weekend and this week's weather promises. We'll take this break for weather and be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you, the 1st of June. We're in the midst of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M, answering any kind of a lawn or question you may have. And by the way, both Julie and John, we have about 6 tons of text messages. But, you know, we have phone calls as well. We welcome both phone calls and texts, as you know. Frank calling in this morning from Roseville, I believe. Frank, good morning. What is your question?
Hi, good morning. Question on an oak tree, actually two. There were two oak trees, and they were combined, you know, growing out of the same root system. One was leaning, and I had to have one cut down, and there's about a foot protruding yet of the dead one. I just noticed it's full of, like, carpenter ants or something on that dead tree protruding yet. So I'm wondering if that will affect the live tree also.
Well, I believe that carpenter ants will only feed on rotting wood. So as long as the other tree is healthy, then it would probably not affect the other tree necessarily, but it's a good thing to keep an eye out for. And if the trees are similar in age, if you see any damage to the oak tree, if you see them transferring over there, it's always good to get a certified arborist in to take a look at particularly really valuable trees like oak trees. So keep an eye on it. And again, I think carpenter ants are really attracted to the rotting wood. And that would make sense because you cut the tree down at that point.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Texter says they have river rock around their landscaping that's very tight mm-hmm. to the plants. Should there be some space between the plants and the rocks?
That's hard to do because those rocks will kind of fall into place due to their weight. It's good to pull mulch away, any kind of mulch away from plant bases. I think with river rock, though, because it's technically an inorganic, we call it an inorganic mulch because it doesn't break down, it should be okay around the plants. If you feel more comfortable pulling it away from the plant base, you can do that. But it's not like an organic mulch, like a wood mulch, that can hold a lot of moisture and insects will, you know, reside in it. And so you can kind of pull it away if you want, but you don't have to.
John, here's a couple of questions, lawn questions. One, texter says, I need to overseed and fertilize. Should they be done together? That's one question. And another long question from another listener says, after applying crabgrass preventer, how long do I have to wait to plant grass seed?
Okay, the first one, you can put down fertilizer at the same time you put down seed. That's normally not too much of an issue. I would advise against over-fertilizing. Generally, for most Minnesota soils, we have high phosphorus as it is, so adding starter fertilizer and things like that is not always necessary, and in some cases it could actually work against you if you're fertilizing a bunch of weeds that are already there or the existing lawn to compete against it. So I like to keep it a little bit lean and actually avoid using fertilizer if I don't have to. Now, as far as the timing of the overseeding, we are getting into a point where you are going to start, especially with the fertilizer, fertilizing a little bit too late in the summer. Another week or two of these kind of moderate temperatures, and I think we'll probably be fine. But if it starts getting a little bit much warmer into the very consistently into the 80s, at that point, you're encouraging the plant to grow in a time when it is going to just kind of try to just sit there and survive some heat and drought stress for later in the summer. So, you know, really just the next couple of weeks, and then after that I would avoid fertilizing more beyond that. Now, the other question as far as the crabgrass preventer, it really depends on the product that was used, on whether or not you can seed again. I kind of answered this already, but if you've already put down a crabgrass preventer this spring, I would wait until the fall to get the most bang for your buck for the seed that you're putting down, just to make sure you're going to get as much germination as possible. Just wait until that Labor Day weekend or so.
Okay, very good. Let's get back to the phones. Bill checking in this morning from Waverly, Minnesota. Bill, you're on CCO. What is your question, please?
I was wondering, I got a pear tree that flowered beautifully, but I was wondering if that needed a mate to produce vegetables.
This is a pear tree?
Pear tree, yeah.
Pear tree? Pear trees will produce fruit on their own. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your answer,
okay.
Julie.
So pear trees will produce fruit on their own, but they will produce more if you have a second pear tree to cross-pollinate. So if you want a lot of pears, I would look on our fruit page under pear trees and look at different types of different cultivars of pears that you can use for cross-pollination. You do want to know what kind of pear tree you have, so that would be really helpful. But again, they will produce some fruit without a second tree.
Listener wants to know this. How do you identify the critters that are making holes in my lawn and how to get rid of them?
Well, that could be any number of things. So as far as the what is making holes, I can provide some suggestions to help with searching out some other symptoms that you might be able to find on the internet. Generally, if they're smaller holes, they're most of the time birds or small rodents like squirrels and chipmunks and things like that that are just burying things. If they're much larger holes, sometimes that's an indication of raccoons and possums. If they're literally rolling up sod, sometimes they're doing that looking for white grubs. The other option could just be moles themselves, moles with an M, as they're just burrowing and tunneling and things like that. Generally, as those animals are making the larger holes, they're really more of a symptom of another problem, and it's difficult to discourage the larger animals from doing that damage. If you address the reason why they're there, that's a good starting point. So grub control can help with the raccoons and possums rolling up the sod. Really just using some kind of a mole trap on the moles would be a good start for them.
Okay. Julie, you wanted to do kind of a follow-up on that hat trick apple question.
Yeah, so the hat trick, John looked some stuff up, and then I did too, because we're curious about this. The hat trick apple tree is a dwarf apple tree that is has been bred to be espaliered, in other words, pruned to be flat against a wall or be trained into a shape or a form, a special form. And because of that, and the hat trick comes from the fact there are three different cultivars that are grafted to this single tree. So you have Zestar, Honey Crisp, and one other one. I'm not sure. I can't remember what that is.
Sweet 16. But
Sweet 16. Thank you. And so the cross-pollination is taken care of because we have three different cultivars on the same tree. So that is not the issue. But these trees are designed to be pruned very heavily into that espalier shape. So they are probably producing too much foliage and not enough concentration on the apples, on the fruiting and flowering. So I would find out and learn how to prune an espalier tree if you don't know. If you do know, you may want to take take a look at some information about removing particular branches from the tree, like the water sprouts. These are very vertical sprouts that come off the branches at a cut point. And really doing a solid job next winter on pruning this tree because it is designed to be pruned. And that may be why you're getting too much leaf and not enough fruit and flower.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones before we take a break. I do believe Diane is waiting there in St. Paul. Thanks for waiting, Diane. What is your question?
Yes, I have some clumps of bearded iris that have got two different varieties in the same clump. And I want to know if you have some suggestions for how I could label the leaves so that I can identify which of the plants belong to each of the two different varieties when I want to split them and move them apart.
Wow. I have to say I've never been asked that question before. How to label the leaves. The problem is the leaves are going to die back. So whatever, even if you put like a number on the leaf with a Sharpie or something, you're going to have that issue with dividing them. Now, iris are divided, I believe, probably late June. They're blooming right now, so we divide them after they bloom. And you could literally divide them at that point and separate the colors and put a tag or a sticker or a number on one of the leaves in that clump. Say number one is a yellow one and number two is a purple one. And then when you divide them in late June, early July, you could go ahead and separate them at that point. The leaves may still be intact. Otherwise, you could put a very loose zip tie around the leaves or one of the leaves. And that would, of course, then not fade or fall off. So then you would know what color that is. That's all I can think of right now.
All right. I know we need to take a bit of a break, but I failed to ask you, Julie, if the Abiders are playing anywhere soon.
We are. Thank you for asking that. We have a number of gigs in June. We are playing on June 20th at Lake Minnetonka Shores, which is a senior living community for their open house. And the public is welcome. It is in Spring Park, Minnesota, not too far from my house. We are playing June 15th, which is for the Carp Fest. This is a citizen group that's concerned about water quality here at Lake Minnetonka. And we are also playing at Minnetonka Orchards in Minnetrista on June 23rd. So we've got three gigs coming up in June. You can find out information and where we are at our website, theabiders.net.
John, will you be joining the Abiders on your bongo drums?
Yeah.
I wish. It looks like it's always a lot of fun.
John, will you be joining the Abiders on your bongo drums?
Yeah.
I wish. It looks like it's always a lot of fun.
It is. They are. It's a lot of fun. Check them out if you can. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Just a reminder, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be here answering any kind of a home improvement question you might have. Our home improvement show next hour here on 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just tuning in, Julie Wisenhorn and John Trappi from the University of Minnesota answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have. And as mentioned earlier, Julie and John, we still have many to go here. So let's see how many folks we can help out before you take your leave. Here's one. Our daughter is buying a house in a typical Minneapolis neighborhood. We notice this yard and most homes around it have horrible grass. The real estate agent said there is a grub problem in Minneapolis. Have you heard of this, and how do you treat it?
Grubs can certainly cause some lawn issues. There's no doubt about that, and they're definitely in Minnesota. So I would first verify that it is grub damage. If it's an entire neighborhood, I'm a little bit skeptical that it would be grubs. More often than not, it's something to do with just excessive shade or poor soil conditions or anything like that. So I would first just verify that it is grubs. If they are, they can be treated. And using something like a preventative treatment is containing the active ingredient chlorantraniliprole or Grub-X. Scott's Grub-X is one that's one of the more common brands for that. That's the most effective treatment, but again, I would just verify that it is grubs first. Otherwise, just focus on, check out the extension webpage, extension.umn.edu, for looking at the lawn care calendar is a great place to start for just looking at all of the different lawn care practices, best management practices that are recommended throughout the year.
Yeah, that is a great resource for that information. You know what I forgot to do, Julie and John, and we always like to mention, because I just got my membership card the other day, the Arboretum. What a great time of year.
I know, it's beautiful. I was just there on Sunday with my cousins who were in town, and the azaleas were unbelievable. Now, I don't know what they look like after the rain yesterday, but they were gorgeous. And, of course, the iris are blooming. Lots of great plants to see. Gorgeous time. But two things I wanted to mention is we have two new offerings. One is called Plant Walks. So these take place between 10 and 11 a.m. on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They're about a quarter of a mile. There's no stairs. They're for all ages, and they are led by volunteers or our very knowledgeable education staff. We also have drop-in discovery booths that are planted throughout the Arboretum, and these are on Thursdays and Sundays from 10 to 1, and it's just about a 5 to 15-minute opportunity for adults, children, teens to do something related to plants, whether it's identifying things or learning things or making something. So great opportunities. These all are free with your admission, and just a really fun thing to do. And that's new this year at the Arboretum.
Get online, though, to get in there, right?
Yes. Yeah. There are some new guidelines for tickets. So members do not need tickets on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Just take a look at that, because there are some changes that make it a little bit easier for some people, and give you some better advantages with your membership.
Just head out west on Highway 5 to 41. I guess that's the closest intersection.
That is right.
You can kind of see it off to your left there.
Take a look, and before you go, read arb.umn.edu and read about what's going on. There's also the Toast and Taste tickets, Taste and Toast tickets that are available now. This is a great opportunity to try some Minnesota drinks and food, and help support the Arboretum.
Absolutely. Great place. Wonderful place. Listener says this: I have a 10-year-old lawn here in the Twin Cities that was Kentucky bluegrass sod. Over the years, I have reseeded with rye and fescue grass seed to fill in small areas from winter kill. Well, now the lawn is multicolored. Can I overseed the entire lawn with Kentucky bluegrass seed to get the lawn back to that nice, even, dark green color?
You can do that. You can overseed, but it's going to be really problematic to get that kind of uniform color again. After you've added that those other species, which, by the way, most of the perennial ryegrass is probably not there anymore. It's really just the fescues, whether that was tall fescue or the fine fescues. I would just kind of embrace that. If you have some grasses that were overseeded into a new area and they you know, they're a different color, it's probably because they're a little bit better adapted and they were able to just outcompete the existing Kentucky bluegrass. I wouldn't necessarily recommend somebody to start over with their lawn, but that would be your best option if having a uniform color across your whole lawn is really that important. That's your best option at this point. Overseeding is not very effective for trying to do that over time.
John, here's a question, and Julie, from our comment about mulching grass clippings. Won't mulching those grass clippings cause you to have to aerate more often?
No. So the clippings themselves are just very low carbon, so they're very easily broken down. They don't contribute to thatch. Aeration is used to reduce soil compaction, not necessarily to reduce thatch in lawns, as is often the thought of. Misconception as far as what contributes to thatch.
Oh, my goodness. We have about a minute to go. Maybe one more quick one. Good morning. Is there a seed or seed blend type you'd recommend for an area that historically had mulch put down, but now I'd like to have some sort of prairie grass / wildflowers? It's an area that won't be mowed.
I would take a look at some of our native plant nurseries. They do seed mixes, and they have good decision-making tools based on the conditions that you have. Some places are part shade, some are full sun, some are shady. And take a look at some of those different offerings that they have.
And let's not forget, John, to remind listeners to check out the university's website, which is what?
extension.umn.edu.
And what do we click on there, Julie?
Yard and Garden. And or you can just go to the search box and type in your question or a topic that you're interested in.
Outstanding. Thank you both, Julie and John. It was a great show, and of course, we could probably do another 6 hours or so standing on our heads. But let's get together again when you guys have time, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Denny.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Julie. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Now, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be joining us. Hope you do, too, to get any questions answered about home improvement. That's our home improvement show next hour here on CCO. 63 degrees in the Twin Cities on our way to 78. Stay with us on this Saturday.